Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined, it appears, from the Brazilian Amazon by Joseph Heumeier. Actually, I'm told it's his backyard, but he does have a songbird working in the background. Joseph is the executive director of the Center for a Secure Free Society, a combat Marine veteran. He is the co-author of Iran's Strategic Penetration of Latin America and one of our go-to guys on what is happening in our hemisphere. Joseph, welcome back. It's good to have you, even if you're not calling in from down south.
No, thanks, Frank. It's a pleasure. Yeah, I'm in the Republic of Virginia.
There you go.
Not as unstable as Brazil, but... Yeah,
no, that's true. But let's talk a little bit about that instability in Brazil. What are we to make of the drama that's playing out as we speak about the impeachment of the president of that country?
No, listen, this is serious. This is serious business. Brazil isn't a small country. It isn't a not influential country in the region. It's the largest country in terms of GDP and population. And it's always been considered as a kind of an alternative to the region, as far as you have countries like Chile and Peru and others that have taken a more market-oriented approach. And Brazil's taken a more state interventionist approach. And many people touted that, especially the left in Latin America, as another model, sort of like a third way in Europe. And that's crumbling before them. The economic situation is very fragile. It's becoming very desperate for several Brazilians. And now the political corruption has become the target. And this really started when the Odebrecht case blew up, when a major multinational firm in Brazil was turned to have all kinds of shady oil deals all throughout the region. And that brought down the former president, Lula da Silva, and now it looks like it's going to bring down the current president, as she was just voted to be able to go through the impeachment process. The vote still has to go to the Senate. The Senate has to approve it. And then from there, I believe the President Dilma Rousseff has 180 days to build up her defense, and it will go to an impeachment trial.
Wow. A couple of things. First of all, is it just the socialism that has afflicted the economy of Brazil? It was not so long ago that it seemed very promising indeed.
Socialism is a big part of it. It's really state interventionist. It's essentially the government crowding out the private sector. You know, there's the old saying that for every dollar you take away from the private sector, you put to the government, it's a dollar that doesn't go back in. And that's really what's happened in Brazil. Through taxes, through price controls, through tariffs for imports, and all kinds of other regulations and state mechanisms, they've been essentially constricting the private sector. And, you know, so the Brazilians have lived with this for many years. It's nothing new. But what's pissed them off is that they found out that these dollars that have been going into the government have been used for other purposes. And there's the corruption, that this money has been enriching certain individuals within the bureaucracy of Brazil. And that's pissed everybody off, because your everyday Brazilian that's working hard and paying taxes, and basically for every, you know, $10 they make, the Brazilian government takes away about six. They're wondering, where's that money going? Why is this, you know, country still falling apart? And that's what's enraged the country and taken to the streets.
So does that, in your judgment, make likely that the Senate will go along with this impeachment proceeding and she will be, in fact, in the dock?
I believe so. I believe this is kind of a train that's left the station. And it's not a matter of if she's going to get impeached. It's more a matter of when, how long she's going to be able to draw this out. I'm sure for her, she's going to try to push this past the Olympics. The Olympics is in about 3 months. This is Summer Olympics in Brazil, and that would be the most embarrassing thing for the country, to have hosted, you know, one of the world's largest sporting events with no president in place. And I mean, when they had the World Cup 2 years ago, they also had this. Obviously, they didn't have an impeachment process, but they had protests and riots and all kinds of things surrounding the World Cup that didn't get reported on as much by the press. But anyone that was in Brazil saw it, and they know that's happening. I envision it's going to be the same this summer.
We'll be watching it closely, as I know will you, Joseph Heumeier. Let me ask you about Cuba. There is a party congress, Communist Party Congress, underway at the moment that is supposed to be mapping out, we're told, a transition to a post-Castro future. What do you think is going on inside those councils, and what might it mean for the relationship President Obama has been busily conjuring?
Well, when you have a Communist Party congregating in Cuba, I mean, you can really only think one thing, and that's the consolidation of power. I think the Cuban government has realized that they're in a new chapter, not necessarily a good chapter, but a chapter that's going to give them a little more legitimacy in the eyes of the international community, and I'm sure the Communist Party wants to leverage that to the utmost possible. To me, very ironic that now, you know, most of, well, not most, but parts of Latin America are taking their cues from Cuba, Well, all these countries are going through all kinds of economic calamities, and you have things in Venezuela, you have problems in Argentina, and now everyone's pointing at Cuba. Like, Cuba's a stable country. Maybe we should look at them and see what they're doing. And that's ironic to me, because everyone knows that Cuba's philosophies, Cuba's policies that have penetrated other countries in Latin America through their intelligence systems has really been it's the root cause of a lot of this.
Yeah. What Cuba's doing right, it appears, is that they've gotten the United States to become its new safety net and perhaps prop up its government. It's a scandal. And I hope that other countries aren't operating on the premise that we'll do the same for them. One of the places that I've been very interested in for some time, Joseph, and we're moving around in your portfolio of Latin America, and again, our guest is Joseph Heumeyer, who has been directing the Center for a Secure and Free Society now for some time, previously was with the Atlas Economic Research Foundation. The case of a country that it looked as though was going to fall under the sway of the socialists, if not worse, the Chavistas, namely Peru. It didn't seem to pan out that way. There's an election underway there now. Neither of the candidates seem to be inclined in that direction. Is this just the latest indication that, in fact, the bloom is off that socialist rose in Latin America?
It's true, and I just came back from Peru. I was actually there during the election, and it's correct. I mean, the trend in the region has found its way into Peru. What's happened in Argentina late last year, what happened in Venezuela through the assembly elections and through other votes and referendums and stuff, such as in Bolivia. The left is being rejected by the masses in Latin America, and they're more than just their ideology, they're also rejecting their policies that have led to corruption. And Peru is no different. They had a leftist candidate, they had a more radical candidate that tried to surge, and was surging in the latest, right before the actual first round of the election. But she actually underperformed. Her name was Veronica Mendoza, and she only finished with about 18% of the vote. So that means more than 80% of the people in Peru, in one form or another, rejected those policies. And the two people that are moving to the next round, Pablo Kuczynski and Keiko Fujimori, are both center-right. They both will definitely change the direction that Peru has been going. I think Keiko Fujimori comes in with a strong lead. She finished with 40%. That's a tremendous lead, I suppose, for the first round. So she just needs to make up 10 points. Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, who's her contender, finished with about 22, 23. So he had some room to make up. Now, you can assume that with the other candidates out of the race now, he's going to jump at least 10 points because he's going to get the anti-Fujimori vote. You mentioned her father, Alberto Fujimori, who was a controversial president because he was involved in human rights violations that were mainly done through his intelligence minister. However, he's in jail now. He's actually suffering from health problems. And I think that anti-Fujimori vote that's still strong isn't as strong as it once was. The more time and separation and space that you put between his father and her, it's better for her. So I think she's in a strong position to win. I mean,
sounds rather like our presidential sweepstakes, for that matter, with people being voted off the island. Lastly, Joseph, we've just had a very bad news, very quickly, if you would, on the quake in Ecuador. What do you think that means for the country and perhaps for the region?
It's very tragic. I lived in Ecuador for about a year during college, and you know, I'm very familiar with the country. I have a lot of friends in the country. And, you know, Colombia, Ecuador, a lot of these Andean countries, they sit on fault lines and near volcanoes. And, I mean, they're always susceptible to this. And this has happened in the past, but it's always tragic when it does. You know, my heart goes out to the folks in Ecuador. I hope they recover from this. I hope they find all the survivors. And, you know, I think there's still some people that are missing or haven't been reported. And I'm sure they'll bounce back. I mean, this isn't the first time it's happened. But, again, you know, this is not to mix politics with natural disasters, but, you know, part of the problem here is also you have a country that is in a grave economic situation. I mean, they depended a lot on oil prices. And when the oil prices plummeted, their economies went into a tailspin. And so now with things like natural disasters, I mean, to be able to recover from that, you need some economic prosperity. That's Chile, for example. And I think that's part of the challenge.
Joseph, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for those words of consolation to the people of and condolences to the people of Ecuador. We share them, as we share the great admiration for your work at the Center for a Secure, Free Society. Keep it up. Come back to us again soon. Next up, Michael Bastash of the Daily Caller joins us on grid vulnerability and you. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.